Hey guys, this is Jared. And before we kick into this episode, in conjunction with the podcast and Manor Companion, we're trying to get a better understanding of you. There's a link to a survey in the show notes, and I want to ask you to stop, click on that link, and complete the survey. It should take less than 10 minutes, and for your time, we'll be giving away a free book or t-shirt of your choice to 17 lucky winners who complete the survey. Why 17? It's in honor of 17 books we've published at Manor Companion. So go click on that survey and come back when you're finished. It'll help us help you. Thanks. This is the You Can Learn Chinese podcast, part of the Seneca Network from SUP China. For everyone who's trying to learn Chinese or reaching for the next level, you came to the right place. I'm your host, Jared Turner, longtime resident of China, co-founder of the Manor Companion Graded Reader Series, and exaggerations went up by 1,000,000% last year. My co-host is John Pazdan, co-founder of Manor Companion, founder of All Set Learning, the Chinese Grammar Wiki, Sinosplice.com, and lives just a stone's throw away from a family that all died of mysterious head injuries. Electronic pop-up dictionaries are all the rage, but are they really helping you improve your Chinese? In this episode, John and I will take a research-based look on the impact of pop-up dictionaries and answer the question, can you really click your way to fluency? Guest interviews with Chris Max, a famous YouTuber you've probably never heard of because all of his videos are in Chinese and made for Chinese audiences. You're gonna love his stories. All this and more, let's get to it. Hey guys, this is Jared Turner coming at you from Utah in the United States.
Hey guys, I'm John Pazdan. I am in Shanghai, China. How's everybody doing?
Okay, John, you know, last week our episode was about dictionaries. And today we have a listener question that is going to be the basis of our discussion today. So I'm going to kick right into this. This email we got from Simon. And Simon, he goes on and says, hi, John and Jared. I love the podcast and want to write a listener question. On the You Can Learn Chinese podcast, you two always bang the drum for extensive reading, or intensive if focused, but for less time. But at higher levels, where extensive materials are more difficult to find with the advent of technology, what are your thoughts on the ideal level of comprehension when reading for both study and pleasure? He goes on to say how he's downloaded an app that has pretty much allows you to read some Chinese with a kind of a pop-up dictionary functionality. And he goes on to say, the philosophy is that due to the ease in which new words can be looked up with a pop-up dictionary and meaning gleaned, the level of comprehension can be lowered. However, I'm aware of John's mantra, don't click your way to fluency. Still, I find myself agreeing that through such technology, difficult content is more accessible than it would be otherwise. For example, I've been reading some content with the aid of the app and found around 95% comprehension, and it can feel extensive since searching new words hardly breaks the flow and there's a balancing effect. Although reading is slowed down due to more new words than in a real extensive reading, it's sped up with the segmentation underlining, ease of tapping, and quizzes on commonly tapped words. So the main point, what are your thoughts on the percentage barriers for intensive and extensive reading when language learner-assisted technology is brought into play? Can they be lowered while bringing the same benefits as a number of fellow learners I've discussed it with say, or should we keep striving for the traditional categories that don't take into account the ease in which can now be read? I hope you'll consider this in the future episode. Sincerely, Simon. All right, Simon, this is a great question. And I think just let's frame this up a little bit for our listeners here who may not be as familiar with extensive reading. In general, we talk about extensive reading. This is when you're reading at like a 98% level of comprehension, 98 to 100%. That's maybe like 1 in 40, 1 in 50 unknown words. Between 90 to 98%, usually we categorize that as intensive reading, and below 90% comprehension, we're at the reading pain level, which we usually don't recommend unless you're super motivated to get through it.
Okay, so I should preface this by saying I've not done a lot of research on this. I do have a lot of experience in this, both personal experience and through my clients at All Set Learning. So I know that these pop-up dictionaries are super useful, and I always recommend them. Now, the question is, does it make text more comprehensible or more extensive? And I'd kind of like to approach this from sort of a logic angle. So when you think about tackling a text, which is really hard and maybe above your level, one way to do it is to just get a text and then get a dictionary. And the old-fashioned way was, you know, you start reading the dictionary on the paper, and then when you can't read a word, You look it up in the dictionary, you make some notes, and you just keep going, right? So what the pop-up dictionary is doing is saving you a lot of time. You don't have to waste time looking up individual words in the dictionary. And that's not important only because it saves time. It's also important because you can kind of hold those words in memory longer because there aren't those long pauses between lookups. Like if you're looking stuff up in a paper dictionary, you're going to have to like look up a word, write it down. Look up another word, write it down. And then you're going to have to like reread the sentence because you kind of lost what was in your working memory, right? So another example is if you look at a textbook, right? And you have this one passage and at the end, they've already looked up the words for you and they're all there at the end. And if you're lucky, those are exactly the words you don't know, exactly the grammar points you need help with. They're all there at the end. So you read a little bit, you look at the bottom. You read a little bit, you look at the bottom. So that saves you a lot of time, right? It's still intensive reading, but it saves you a lot of time. And then if you just take it even further, you could take these words and you move them up into the text or right next to the text so that every line, every word you need is just right there. And then you're approaching what the pop-up dictionary does, right? So it is saving you time for sure, but it's not making intensive reading extensive because the limiting factor here is not the paper or the lookup or the technology. The limiting factor is the human brain. And if you have a long sentence and you're looking up all those words and you have to hold them all in your working memory, like your brain is going to get overloaded if it's too difficult. So I do not think that this means more difficult texts become extensive reading, but it definitely saves you a lot of time. And in many cases, it makes texts which you would ordinarily not even consider trying to tackle because they're just too hard and looking up the words would take too long. It makes them accessible. And if you read through one of these super difficult texts that you can actually get through with the aid of these pop-up dictionaries, you can understand it, but it's not like you really picked up a lot of words from that because that's like super ultra mega intensive reading. And you're not going to hold on to a lot of that vocabulary. So anyway, that's my take. It's definitely useful, but there's no substitute for extensive reading where you're not looking up words. You want to be able to read without tapping. And when you think about literacy and definitions of literacy, I don't think there's any definition of literacy which involves tapping on words. Sorry.
Well, there we go. Well, that is a well thought response, John. But I've got something to share because I actually took the time and I found a few research papers on this exact subject.
Did someone help you with this, Jared?
Maybe, maybe not. Actually, I got to give a shout out to Diane Neubauer. She is awesome. She's been on one of our podcasts before. She's an academic and she's actually doing her PhD right now in Chinese language acquisition. So she did point me in the right direction on this. But first off, I'm going to bring up this research paper by an academic named Gene Wang. He's from Indiana University, Purdue University of Indianapolis. Funny enough, I went to Purdue. Hey. But his paper is titled Reading Strategies and Reading Comprehension Retention with and Without a Pop-Up Dictionary by Beginning Learners of Chinese. Okay. So I'm just going to break this down real quick. All right. And this should be relevant to many listeners. Basically, what he did is he gave some text to a group of students, and he kind of switched up a little bit. Some they had the pop-up dictionary, some they didn't. Some they had a pop-up dictionary the first time, and the second time they reread it later without a pop-up dictionary. And he did this different methodology to see, hey, you know, how are students using pop-up dictionaries, and what kind of vocabulary retention are they getting by using them? So, hey, this is relevant because, hey, we're talking about anecdotal stuff, but let's get some real numbers here. What's really sticking? So, hey, now, John, I'll have a question here for you. So hang tight. But we're talking here that we found that students are generally using two strategies with these dictionaries. One they call them is local strategies, and the other one is called general strategies. So local strategies is when you're like, you just don't know that word you're looking at or the character or something like that. And you're like, how do you figure that out? A general strategy is just like maybe using the whole like understanding of the sentences or the paragraph to try to understand maybe what that word might have meant, maybe kind of infer a meaning. So, all right. So John, okay, here's the question. What do you think, what percentage of the students, when using the pop-up dictionary to look up a word they didn't know, what percentage do you think use it to actually look up the English translation of that character?
You mean just at least once, or you mean every time they used it?
Every time they used it.
I don't think that's 100% because I know from my own experience that sometimes people would just like want to check the tone. So I don't know, 80%?
Yeah, it was like 90%. Like 90% are using it.
Okay.
Now, here's the other question, okay? What percentage of students do you think were using the pop-up dictionary just to look up the pinyin?
You mean for every lookup?
Whenever they used it, they just used it for the pinyin.
Is that not just 100% minus 90?
Yeah. Actually, I think you're just about right. I think it was like 5%. All right. So there was only like two students in the whole study that were only using it like just to look at pinyin. They weren't paying attention to the English translations. All right. So
this is like the perfectionist type student, and I have been that student, and I know people like that. So yeah, those people are real.
Well, okay, and I'm going to bring this up because I think it plays into the actual like results and the recommendation of the study. So, okay, here's what they found out is that when students were using the pop-up dictionary, they weren't really using like these they call the local strategies or even general strategies to try to understand what was being read because they had that leverage, you know, they had that tool to be able to look up characters. So they didn't really need to like kind of guess or try to figure out a lot of things because it was there for them. But of course, when they were tested without that, obviously they had to use, you know, a lot more skills, use their wits, you know, to figure out what that character might be. That's one thing. So there was like essentially less work required when you have a pop-up dictionary. But the interesting thing about this is that they found, and I'll quote this, that statistical analysis indicated that the gain in reading comprehension through the use of pop-up dictionaries was not retained over the short term. So there was simply no significant difference in reading comprehension scores when they were using the pop-up dictionary and then later on didn't have it. So the bottom line is if you had the pop-up dictionary and you were reading something, okay, and then you had to reread it, you know, some days later, is that using that pop-up dictionary didn't really teach you those words that you looked up. That's the takeaway.
Yeah, the simple sentence that I often use is more effort means more learning. So if you're putting forth no effort, you're not actually learning it. Of course, there are ways to use tools and also make effort and learn, but I think in that case, it might apply here.
Yeah. Now, I also think there's a few nuances in this, is that number one, if you're just reading a short passage and using these pop-up dictionaries, that short passages or you know even shorter articles are not going to give you enough repetition, period, to really acquire new characters. So I think that's an important implication.
Right.
So let's say you're using this, you know, to bridge a gap. Maybe your learning gap is like your 80% comprehension or something, and you're using something short. Yeah, you're not really learning those words, right? Because you're understanding it primarily in English as opposed to understanding it in Chinese. And it's obviously easier, but you're not getting the gains from it.
Right. So to really learn it, you need the repetition and then you need to be engaged like cognitively. And if you're just trying to get through something short, maybe you just want to know what it means, you're not really studying it, then yeah, you wouldn't expect that to stick, right?
You know, what I think about this like is it's like maybe learning to do math when you were younger, right? And let's say you had to do times tables and then get in some, you know, algebra or whatever, you can even more advanced math. And let's say you had like a calculator or a computer or whatever that could instantly calculate that for you, right? Without actually spending that time of sometimes struggling or trying to work through that problem and work it out for yourself, you're never really going to learn it well, right? I had a friend who I tutored on math and, you know, he would get to a hard point. He'd look at me like, oh, what is this? And I'm like, you know, maybe I knew the answer, but I just, you know, hey, work it out. Struggle. And when he couldn't get any further, then I helped, right? But if you're instantly like looking for that like crutch or that help, you know, you never really struggle. And just as you put it, John, right?
No effort means no learning.
That's right. So you can't exactly click your way to fluency.
Okay, so that study was about elementary learners who had a foundation but not a high level. You have other studies too?
You know what? That's great, because now we're going to flip this on its head, because this last study was with beginning learners, elementary learners, low-level learners. Now, the same guy, Jing Wang, at the Department of World Languages at Indiana University, Purdue University in Indianapolis, he wrote another paper, and this paper was titled The Use of E-Dictionary to Read E-Text by Intermediate and Advanced Learners of Chinese. All right, so now he's taking some higher level learners. And these learners were in like an intensive Chinese program in China. And some of these guys had really good Chinese. They've been studying for many years. They've been living in the country. So they had a high level of competence in Chinese. And the other ones were intermediate, but you know they still got a really strong base. So he gave them longer texts that was primarily for natives. It wasn't super hard, but it was definitely like a harder text. And he allowed them to use this pop-up dictionary so they could hover over, you know, a word or character they didn't know and see the definition. And John, what do you think the results of this one would be?
Better. I think you gave away the ending, Jared.
Maybe I did. Okay. So yeah, what they found is that people who are using this at an intermediate or an advanced level, pretty much it is it increased the enjoyability of reading, right? And I think that obviously makes sense because if you're stopping so frequently to look up characters, it's just not fun. But they were able to comprehend the text better, having a pop-up dictionary, and they were able to essentially read more words and read faster than they would be otherwise.
I also wonder if maybe these students weren't using pop-up dictionaries before, so they had like years of not using pop-up dictionaries, like strengthening their reading skills, so that when they then introduced them, it was like this breath of fresh air that just kind of turbocharged their learning rather than, you know, just being something they've always relied on.
I think that's a really good point. Overall, that conclusion is that it was beneficial for intermediate and advanced learners. And I think he doesn't actually address this. My inference behind this is that simply at a higher level, you can theoretically bridge a larger gap. And why? Because you simply have a stronger base. You have a stronger command of the language. You just are able to comprehend it better. And so if you're able to comprehend it better, obviously you can handle a little more ambiguity in a text and you can handle a little bit more unknown. And it's going to be easier to use these tools only really you need it because you're going to be more familiar and more confident with the characters and the sentences and the grammar and everything that you already know.
I think cognitively speaking, it's going to be a lot easier for intermediate and above because you already know all the core words that form the basic structure of the sentences. So it's not like you don't understand the overall arc of what the sentence is trying to say. Like if there's a 但是 in the middle, you know there's a but. You know, even if they're harder words, you've already learned these words. So then you're just slotting in the content words, right? So you know what you're talking about. Whereas if you're a lower level learner, you don't understand the logic, you don't understand any of the words, and then you're trying to figure out how everything relates to, you know, the other parts of the sentence while also remembering what each word means. It's just so much harder. But once you have those building blocks, you know, the grammar, you're just kind of slotting words in and it just clicks a lot easier.
So think of this like a video game. And you're fighting the big bad boss at the end, but maybe you're doing like a speed run through. You got like the best weapon, but your guy's weak, you know, even though you got this great weapon. Nah, you can't. It's hard to beat that monster or the big bad guy. But, you know, if you've leveled up, you're strong, you're buffed. Maybe you don't even need the best weapon to beat him. You know, you don't have to have the best, but you can do it. Definitely helps you. So that's a little bit of the ways I think about this. And, you know, this has also been validated. There was another research paper by two academics in Malaysia at the University of Technology, Malaysia. And they pretty much found a very similar thing using these pop-up dictionaries for advanced learners. Proved beneficial, improved the pleasurableness of the reading and betterment of the attitudes, and they had good outcomes in benefiting their language abilities.
Yeah, I can imagine scenarios where you're trying to read Chinese. For whatever reason, you don't have access to a dictionary. And like, every article you read, there's like one or two keywords and you can guess, but you just don't know what it means. And that's so frustrating. And so being able to like take pretty much any article and being able to understand it, like that can be a real game changer. So yeah, for advanced learners, man, this is a great tool.
So I guess let's sum this up here. Is that basically the takeaway is that if you're at a lower elementary level, maybe you're still struggling to even comprehend maybe some of the graded reader texts out there, pop-up dictionaries, they can be the assist, but it's at that level, we have to be really careful about it becoming a crippling crutch, something you turn to immediately the moment you struggle, okay? And overall, you're not going to get as much benefits in using that to bridge a bigger gap than you will when you get to a higher level, when you have more competence in the language, and when you're able to read text, comprehend it without requiring a translation in order to get the gist of what's going on.
Yeah, so I think at any level, if you want to use a pop-up dictionary, that's okay, but just don't rely on it too much at any level, not as a beginner and even not as an advanced learner. If you want to be literate in Chinese, you want to also be able to read stuff without the help of a dictionary. And yeah, it's hard, but that practice is going to make you a better reader and a better learner.
So, John, can you click your way to fluency?
I would say no, Jared. No, but you can click your way to greater enjoyment of advanced texts.
Yay! Yay! And you can learn Chinese.
And you can benefit at an intermediate level.
All right, now it's time for a word from our sponsor. Today, our sponsor is...
All Set Learning online book club courses.
Oh, yeah.
So these are one-on-one lessons online with a live teacher. They're not video courses. And the idea is you read the book, and then you cover each chapter of our level one graded readers, one by one, 1 hour for each chapter. And you actually get to use the language talking about the story because, you know, you want to develop your speaking and not just your reading, right?
That's right. So what does this course do for me?
So there are discussion questions in the book. And if you're a normal reader, you probably just skip over those. But this gives you an opportunity to answer them with teachers. But then there's also additional questions, lots of practice of like the grammar and the vocabulary that's actually really useful that appears in the story. So that after you finish the book, you make sure that you don't lose those really valuable words that you could be using to make your spoken Chinese stronger.
So where can I find these courses, John?
So www.allsetlearning.com/courses. Look for the book club courses in there.
Wow, I'm going to go there right now.
You should.
Click, click, clickety click. Click, click, clickety click. All right, now it's time for Rants and Raves. John, what do you have for us today? Do you have a rant or do you have a rave?
Jared, I'm going to mix it up today and I'm going to do a rant. And this is a rant about smoking in China. It is so annoying. Too much smoking. I was listening to my wife's like podcast or something she was listening to, or maybe it was kind of like a TED Talk. I don't know. Is this Chinese researcher talking about how in China rates of lung cancer are super high? And they've been studying what happened in the United States and how there was a big push, you know, to limit public smoking, you know, a tax on the tobacco industry, all that. And the result is a huge drop in lung cancer in the United States over time. And the sad thing is that in China, that drop is not coming for a long time because it's so hard to get people to stop smoking.
Wow.
Like one of the things I've noticed in China is public restrooms. It's like so many men can't use a toilet without smoking. It's crazy. Yeah. I find it really annoying as a non-smoker. But yeah, that's about it. Lung cancer and smoking. Mm.
I was just talking with a friend about this. You know, it's like, have you ever been into, you know, the bao-ans at the gate of your complex? Ever been into the little room where they like wait out at? That place is like, you know, just smeared, you know, the walls with like nicotine and tar and stuff. Ah!
There is hope for the younger generation, but man, it's going to take a few years.
Sure will.
Okay, so Jared, rant or rave for you?
Okay, John, I've got a rave. All right. So my rave is about our audiobooks. We had a lot of questions about these. In fact, we had a little faux pas on our audiobooks. We had recorded our level two audiobooks and we did our breakthrough ones. But when we did our level two audiobooks, the people that were doing the recording, they recorded at the same speed that they had recorded the breakthrough level books, which are much slower. And we're like, we can't do this. It's so bad. And we sped it up and then it sounded bad. And some people think, oh, this is like robotic. So we redid them and they are now up on like Audible and iTunes. But guys, here, I'm going to give you a tip because not everyone likes Audible. You got to get like this subscription for it and everything. Go to Kobo, Kobo.com. You can get our books. They're like $2. They're like super cheap. So it's way better. You don't have to subscribe to anything. And I would definitely recommend checking that out if you want to get the audiobooks. Because, hey, who likes things that are cheaper, right?
I have a feeling our listeners are a fan of free audio like podcasts.
Well, hey, good thing this podcast is free. this episode, we're bringing you one of our most memorable interviews that aired in January of 2020. Enjoy. Chris is one cool cat with some serious Chinese chops.
My mom's from Honduras. My dad's from Chile.
And now you are a professional YouTuber, right?
Yes, you could say that.
Chris has an obvious talent for languages, but as you listen to his story, you'll hear how he took extra steps to grow and develop his Chinese into what it is today. And with that, he's carved out his own career in this world.
I went to school in California. When I graduated, I decided to come out to China for a couple months, actually. I was doing a gap year. I kind of just ended up staying. It's been 8 years now. I started a business. I'm loving it.
His story has something for every one of us. Stay with us. Chris, dude, totally awesome to have you on our show.
Well, thanks for having me.
Yeah, so okay, you're on vacation right now.
Yes, I'm here in Sanya in Hainan.
This is the Chinese New Year, so what's going on? What are you doing down there?
So I'm here with my wife and my in-laws. We're just down here for about a week or so to get away from the cold in Beijing.
So anyone who hasn't been to Hainan, that's like the resort area. What would we liken it to, Chris?
It's kind of like Mallorca for the Europeans.
Maybe like Cancun for us Americans.
Yes, there we go. It's kind of like Cancun. Very commercialized in a couple areas, but it's a pretty nice place. What I do, I run an education company and then I make videos for YouTube and then like the Chinese social media sites like Weibo, Bilibili, and Douyin.
And that's crazy because like I went to your YouTube site and anyone listening here probably has no idea who you are because your YouTube site, it's only Chinese.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, it's really weird because we had no idea that like people would even watch our stuff on YouTube when we first started out. And then one day a video just took off. Like we make analyses of Chinese celebrities speaking English to kind of help people, you know, maybe with common mistakes that all Chinese people might make. So it's kind of fun and kind of educational at the same time. And a video just took off. Overnight, it was actually the day before my 30th birthday. My business partner and I were in Hawaii. And we just saw like, oh, one of our videos has 100,000 views. What the hell just happened?
Wow.
And just kind of from there, I got like really excited. My business partner was just like, nah, man, like that's, yeah, okay, whatever. Like it's like 500 subscribers. It's not a big deal. Like let's focus on Chinese social media. And then like it just kept growing and it kept growing. And I don't know, like here we are a year later and we're doing all right.
That's pretty cool. So is your biggest following on YouTube or do you have also equal amounts of following on the other Chinese social media platforms?
No, YouTube is actually currently our smallest one. Between Douyin, Weibo, and Bilibili, we have about 2.2 million subscribers on Chinese social media.
Well, that's pretty hefty.
Yeah, it's not bad. Like I always tell people like, you know, in China, these numbers mean different things, like 2 million people. It's not a huge account, but I mean, like, yeah, it is. It's 2 million people. You can't say that that's small.
That's true. I mean, when you deal with the numbers in China, it's just on an exponentially larger scale. You have a good point there. But what would you say 2 million followers in China would be equate to about how many followers in, you know, the Western media?
I usually tell people maybe divide it by 4 or 5, maybe even more, just because there are so many people on just one platform. Like Douyin, which is, I guess, the Chinese equivalent of TikTok, you get people that gain 1 million fans in a week, which is insane. It's unheard of in the West.
Wow, that is significant. Well, Chris, start walking me through this. So you went to university in California, and what did you study there?
I majored in finance, minors in economics, Italian, and German.
So what took you to China?
So it was basically, I wanted to take a gap year, and one of my really good friends who graduated the year before me was in China working. Well, he was between China and the US, and his boss sent him to Beijing to take lessons. And he told me one day, like, oh man, Beijing is super fun. It's really international. And like, I love learning languages. I've studied a bunch. And he just said, like, hey, you should come check it out. And actually didn't want to go. Like, I, as a finance major, knew that China was developing really quickly and that it's a place to be, you know, but I'd never been interested in China, so I hesitated a bit, but then I just, you know what, whatever, I'll just go. I was there by myself. I literally didn't know a single other soul, and I just kind of went to a couple of restaurants, and like I used the 3.5 sentences that I'd learned of Chinese to try to order food and all this kind of stuff. And like, it was a little overwhelming. Chinese classes started, and I just took 4 hours of Chinese classes a day, 2 hours of speaking, 2 hours of reading and writing, and I had a blast. I loved it. It was really fun, but so different from every other language that I'd previously learned myself.
Well, I want to hear now, because you went through this class for 2 months, right?
Yes.
What happened afterwards? 8 years later, you're still in China, but I mean, obviously there's something there that kept you around or piqued your interest.
Yeah, so I mean, I guess the first thing was, like I've mentioned that I've studied a bunch of languages. I grew up speaking Spanish at home, and I took German classes in high school. I studied Italian, French, and Japanese in college. And when I got to China, I just felt like, wow, this is a completely different ballgame. Like, I don't even know how to approach this. I mean, that in and of itself, like the language aspect was super interesting to me, you know, with tones and characters and all of that. But I started meeting people. For me, like, that's the thing. That's why I learn languages, is just to be able to communicate with other people and understand their culture, like how they think and all that. You know, after those 2 months, I started making a lot of friends. I took the HSK, and like I started thinking like, hey, you know what, maybe this actually could have some like positive implications for my career. But it seemed like, you know, as a finance major, this might be a decent place to be and a good language to learn.
Well, I want to know, like, how was your Chinese progressing at this point? I assume you're gaining some proficiency, but you're still very early on.
About 2 months in, you know, I wasn't really taking the classes seriously. I was hanging out with all these Europeans, Latin Americans. Like, it was just really cool for me as like a language nerd to spend my days speaking Italian, German, English, Spanish. And, you know, I would go home, hang out with my friends, speak those languages, and then I'd get to class the next day and be like, oh, like I didn't do the homework. kind of awkward. But in January, things kind of changed. I started having that little mindset shift that I was mentioning. And as I made friends, like, I started hanging out with them more. So I started hanging out less with Europeans and a little bit more with Chinese people. I still didn't really do my homework, but I was trying to use everything that I learned in class out at the restaurants and bars with my new Chinese friends. So about 7 months in, I took the HSK4 and passed that.
Well, that's great. That's a good benchmark.
Yeah. And I mean, I think the big thing was actually, we noticed that myself and like a couple of our other friends who made Chinese friends, they were the ones that were progressing the fastest.
Mm-hmm.
So like that, I think that's the thing that I always tell people. It's just like, yeah, like you should study from textbooks and stuff like that, but not for too long. Don't spend too much time on textbooks, because otherwise you're going to be learning kind of weird stuff, really formal, stilted speech, and just get out there and talk to people, you know?
What were you actually doing where your Chinese started to really take off?
Well, to be honest, at first I went to a lot of bars, and I made a lot of like Chinese guy friends. And that's actually one of the big things that a lot of people always say. She's like, oh, you must have a Chinese girlfriend. That's where your Chinese is so good. Or, you know, reverse it for a Western girl who speaks good Chinese. It's like, oh, you must have a Chinese boyfriend. And I've actually found that it tends to not be that. It tends to usually be, if you made a friend of the same sex, that's what kind of is going to take your Chinese to the next level. So I had like one really good guy friend that I spent a lot of time with. And that was a huge help, just because you can like hang out with, you know, another guy, go grab some beers and like just spend hours together.
That's pretty cool. You know, I like this story, Chris, because this actually parallels a little bit of something that I've noticed about Chinese culture. And maybe you could comment on this, but like when I've read some of like old Chinese fairy tales or fables or stories, they always have this situation of you have like these two guys, they're the two heroes, and one of them's traveling, they run across each other, and it's like they find one thing's in common, and they're like, we're going to now be, you know, eternal brothers, right? it's just like instant, right? And I've noticed that's something that's like not an uncommon thing like in Chinese culture.
Yeah, that's super common. Like when I would go out to bars with people, I would like to go to small places, like not these like huge bars where a lot of foreigners are hanging out with, but actually like, you know, back when Beijing had a lot of Hutong bars, you'd go to these places and you sit at a tiny little table with another table, like with another group of people next to you. And when you're having a conversation, like some people would hear you and be like, oh, wow, 那边有老外啊,他在说中文啊,哇. And then like sometimes they'll just like start a conversation and then, you know, you make a new friend. And a lot of times, you know, it might just be a guy that you talk to that day and then like never again. But usually at the end of the night, they'd just be like, oh, 我们现在就是好哥们儿啊,加点微信,然后咱们就经常联系吧,可以出去喝酒. So like we're super best friends now. Let's get each other's WeChats. Let's go out, get some drinks. And a lot of times like that never happens, but you know, it's just really cool to meet people like that.
Oh, I've had so many experiences like that too. I think it's kind of funny too, is I look back and it's not uncommon for like, you know, you meet some girls and, you know, I'm married, but I still have girls ask me for my WeChat all the time. But I honestly have just as many guys ask me for my WeChat, you know, they're like, oh, we should be friends.
Yeah, no, I mean, like before I started doing social media, where like people would just add me and be like, "Hey, woman, let's become WeChat friends and we can talk." And it's like, sure, random guy I just met, but why not? Okay,
yeah,
I would never say no back then.
Honestly, this is interesting because I look back on my experience learning Chinese, and you came to China in 2011. That still was QQ yes. time, right? I came to China in 2010. And yeah, I was knee deep in QQ and WeChat. When did we come out? WeChat 2015?
Around then.
Okay.
And I remember because it was just kind of funny. In 2012, one of my Chinese teachers was just like, hey, you need to download this new WeChat thing. It's going to change the world. And everybody's just like, well, what the hell is that? We have QQ. Like, why would we want to download something new?
Yeah.
By the same company? Like, what are they doing?
Yeah.
But I downloaded it and that was great. Like that actually really sped up my Chinese learning just because there's so many people that you could send messages to all the time.
And, you know, when I was talking, when I'd use QQ to communicate or just talk to people, it was a huge help to my Chinese because, you know, you get to see that in context and you see how people react and how they're using phrases and stuff. And it makes a big difference.
Yeah. I mean, like, that's the thing that I always tell people, like, you know, Chinese people will come up and tell me like, hey, I've been studying English for 20 years. You've been doing it for 8. Why is your Chinese better than my English? And it's just like, well, input, you know, you need that, you know, it's called comprehensible input, stuff that's like a little bit above your level maybe, but you can go in and see the context, look words up. And I was spending like days, like my entire day would be filled with conversations like that, spoken and over text and everything. And like, that is huge. Like, you need that.
Well, how many months in from studying Chinese did you start to do this where you're going out and just meeting people in bars and stuff?
It was probably about 4.5 months in. One of my classmates who's from the Netherlands, he went to this place called Tango. It's like this huge KTV/club. And he met the owner, obviously a Chinese guy. And like, they kept inviting him out to like go play pool and, you know, just have drinks, have dinner. And then like one night he invited me along. And like I went, they were all super nice. And then just from there, I started meeting more and more people.
And where was your Chinese at that point? Because I mean, after 4.5 months, I mean, it's still quite basic. So what were you saying? How were you trying to communicate? And what was that struggle like?
I mean, it was terrible, you know, like, like everybody is super friendly and nice and they would slow down their speech a little bit. But, you know, like the average Chinese person, much like the average American, they have no idea how to like, you know, temper their language or just like make it a little bit more basic for somebody who's learning. So sometimes they'd like throw a chengyu at you, or sometimes they just use like a really, I guess, colloquial phrase that's definitely not in the textbooks. But, you know, that kind of sink or swim setting that I was in was just like, okay, well, I'm going to learn a billion words a day. And like, I wasn't actively studying them. It's just, I was exposed to so many different things and like hearing everybody talk, stuff just starts to stick, you know?
So from this point, like, how did you continue your studies? I know you said you decided to go, hey, 6 more months studying, but you're also just jumping into conversations. So what were you doing to really learn and accelerate your Chinese at this point?
Like I said, I started off doing 4 hours a day of classes. We had like, you know, 6 or 7 people in the class. And after about 4 months, I think, I switched away from the group classes to private classes because I felt like they were kind of messy. Like people kept coming and going, and I kind of knew how to study a language already. So like I wanted to go more at my own pace, which might be like a little bit more accelerated compared to the average person. I had textbooks, you know, like we were just going along. It was the Kouyu Sucheng series that was used by a lot of BLCU classes back in the day. I mean, that was my textbook experience, and then the rest was just out talking to people.
So in your studying at this point, like what did you find that was effective and what did you find that wasn't effective?
So the thing that I always tell people is don't spend all your time on textbooks. And I know that you guys did an episode on that.
Yeah, our last episode, in fact.
So many people just look at their textbooks and like they make word lists and try to memorize vocab, and they never take that out into the real world, or they never try to like really test themselves on it, like out on the front lines. And that for me is the biggest thing, where you have to like actively recall all these phrases and everything that you're learning. So that, I mean, was a huge thing. And like once you actually start having conversations with people, like I love imitating people and like just kind of seeing how they speak, finding like their speech patterns and all that kind of stuff. And that's what I started doing. Like being out at bars and stuff, I would just listen to what word this guy just used. How did he say that? Like, what was he stressing? And, you know, at the beginning, like I would catch like one word in a sentence, and that might be the key word. It might be completely irrelevant, but like just paying attention to how they speak is huge, because it's totally different from the textbook.
You know, I agree with that for sure. So I want to know what happened next here in your life. I mean, I can fast forward later and we can see that you've now achieved a high level of proficiency in Chinese. And for anyone listening here, we'll put his YouTube channel in the notes so you can check out. You can see how good Chris's Chinese is. But Chris, like what happened between then and now where you were able to really take off and improve your Chinese?
All right. So I guess a couple key milestones or key points in my learning. One was shortly after I passed the HSK-4, like I got like a pretty high score on it. And all my teachers were like, wow, like you've only been learning for 7 months and you passed. That's great. That's amazing. And then one of my teachers, he just told me like, yeah, but you know, like you kind of sound like you're from Xinjiang. And like for, it was just like, what? I didn't even know what that meant, to be honest, at the time. So he explained, you know, in Xinjiang, there's the Uyghur ethnic minority, and a lot of them don't speak Chinese as a native language. So they tend to have, kind of similarly to foreigners, a, well, not the most solid grasp on tones. So I asked him, I was like, oh, what do you mean? He's like, oh, well, like your tones are all over the place. Like, huh, okay. Why has no one ever told me this? And he said, well, you know, it's kind of too late now anyway. Which I was just like, what? What do you mean it's too late? I've only been learning for 7 months. Like, anyway, yeah. I decided to like sit down. He wasn't sure at that time anymore. I sat down with somebody and I was like, no, we're going to learn these tones. You're going to teach me. And everybody kept telling me actually like, oh, like, you know, your tones are fine. Like they're like 60% there. I was like, that means 4 out of 10 of them are wrong, you know? So I sat down and I spent 2 months. 2 months where like I didn't learn any new textbook stuff. All I did was learn how to pronounce things.
Wow.
Get the tones right, get the pronunciation right. That was 2 hours of class a day, and I would go home and probably do another 2 hours of practice on my own. And all my teachers were just like, well, you're insane. Like there's absolutely no point. You're already, you know, comprehensible, but like that comprehensible doesn't sound that nice.
Yeah.
It just seems like, oh, I can understand you. But I spent those 2 months, and after that, a lot of people who hadn't seen me for 2 months were just like, whoa, what the hell happened? And that for me was like a big turning point, just because pronunciation, like even though, yeah, like you don't need to sound like a native, but if you have something that's closer to a native, people are going to be a lot nicer. Like one, they're like confused and shocked, and two, like they're just going to feel like, oh, like maybe you're more like one of them, and they start treating you differently.
Yeah. So can you share any experiences where people started treating you different because you had a more native-like accent?
So, I mean, one of the things is, you know, a lot of people who come to China and start learning Chinese, one day in, 2 days in, a week in, they start realizing like Chinese people are super friendly. Like they're going to hear you say, oh, ni hao. And they're like, oh, wow, ni zhong le shuo de zheng bang. And like that, everybody's super complimentary.
Yeah.
But it started just like being a little bit more genuine. Like you could see surprise on people's faces. And they would start inviting me to like all these other cool little places that seemed less like the let me show off my token foreign friend and more like let's just kind of hang out and have a conversation.
So you're able to have like deeper connections with people. That's what it sounds like to me.
Yeah. And like, I mean, this is something that's been proven time and time again. It's like, yeah, you're totally fine talking to somebody that has a non-native accent. But when you hear your own, you're just like, oh, you're from the U.S. Like, oh, you're German, blah, blah, blah. Like you get a bit more excited and like you're just like, oh, yeah, like you're one of us. You're like me.
Yeah.
And then I guess fast forward 2 years later, I went and took classes at Tsinghua's IUP program, which is like a more advanced Chinese program. I did that first semester. And I had actually not learned characters very well. I learned them, but it wasn't like the most systematic way, partially because my first teacher wasn't that great, and partially because I was really lazy in the beginning and I was just hanging out with people, talking. So I kind of ignored characters. Like I didn't like them. Mm-hmm. They didn't like me. I didn't like them. And then like when I got to IUP, this teacher who like, I will say to this day, like he's the best language teacher that I've ever met. Not the best Chinese teacher that I've ever met, but like the best language teacher. Like I've taken a lot of languages. He was incredibly helpful. He just grabbed a random book. We didn't even use a textbook. He went to his bookshelf and grabbed three books. He was like, oh, this one's about food. This one's about language. And this one's about traveling. Which one do you want to read? I was like, I have no idea. He's like, all right, we're gonna read this book about language. Mm-hmm. And it was just called... So like, I guess, you know, literature is made from meat or flesh, which is like, you know, made from people. Mm-hmm. So the book was actually a collection of essays written for this column in a Hong Kong newspaper. And it was incredibly difficult. Like I started reading them and I was like, I can't do this. I was reading one page a day and like having to look up everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the next day, like the second day of class, I went in and I was just like, no, I'm sorry. Like, Hua Lao Shi, like, I can't do this. He's like, yeah, you can. You got this. So like we sat down and like we went over the previous day's one page of text. He explained everything to me and like, he's like, okay, well, that's interesting. He would explain all the characters, the background, like all the components and everything. And he started doing this and every day for a semester, that's what we did.
Wow.
And at the end of that semester, I was just like mind blown. I don't know what happened. Like all of a sudden I feel like I can read most things. Like obviously, like, you know, classical Chinese and like Cheng Yu and a lot of stuff that they were still beyond me, but all of a sudden I felt like I know most of the characters that I see.
Wow.
And I know what they mean. Like this weird moment where 2 months of classes and I was just like, all right, something's happened. It just kind of felt like, you know, Neo in the Matrix where they just put stuff into his head and he's just like, oh, I know Kung Fu.
Yeah. You know, that's interesting to hear because I work with a lot of Chinese teachers in a lot of elementary and middle school, high schools around the United States. And one of the concepts that I've talked to them about doing reading classes is that a lot of times teachers think, oh, I need to have like a curriculum. You know, I need to have a lessons plans or things like that. And I said, well, what you can do is you just take the textbook, throw it out of the classroom, and you replace it with a story, a novel. And of course, you know, we use graded readers from Mandarin Companion. But you can do that because you can just go read stuff and you can talk about it. And once you have a story or something interesting, it's now opens up a whole cornucopia of things to talk about and have discussions about. And of course, you can go through and read. And it sounds like the text that she gave you was actually very difficult. And usually, you know, we say, hey, it's better to start something easier, but it's more approachable if you have a teacher who can guide you through it. And that's usually more like guided reading. That's a little bit, sounds to me, what you're describing.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's the whole concept of I plus one, you know, like finding something that's just like a little bit above your level. And that was definitely not I plus one. That was like I plus 100. you know, I had this teacher who was phenomenal, and every day he would just break down the billion words that I wrote down on this one page. And at the end of the day, I would feel like, oh, okay, like actually I get what's happening. And I wouldn't recommend this method to most people, like unless you have a really good teacher who's going to be sitting there with you. But like it did just speed everything up, you know, 100 times.
That sounds like it was effective for you. And that's fantastic. So you just picked up a lot of characters from that. And I assume you saw them in context in the book. And it was sounded like it was interesting material for you.
I am a language nerd. And like these books were basically talking about how the language has been changing in Hong Kong, how mainland Chinese is different from Hong Kong Chinese in like the writing, and how actually Hong Kong Chinese is getting influenced by English. Stuff that most people wouldn't really like or find interesting, but like I loved it. And if you have a teacher that's going to be taking you through this, then you can choose something that's really hard and way above your level. Otherwise, I would probably just recommend graded readers because they're going to be so much better at kind of helping you gauge where you're at.
So let's fast forward a little bit here. How did you get started making videos teaching English to Chinese people?
I finished this course in 2014. And actually, my friend from college, who's the guy that got me here in the first place, he did that course with me. And then he moved to Zhuhai, like all the way in the south in Guangdong province. We were talking all the time and we were thinking of starting a business. We had taught a bunch of English and like I actually helped foreign exchange students with their English back in college. And I saw like how Chinese people learned the language and I always found it like incredibly ineffective. I thought it was really weird. Like everybody's just sitting there memorizing vocab all day. So we decided like, hey, why don't we kind of start our own business? We can share a lot of our experiences, and especially like my experiences learning a lot of languages. And I'm pretty sure we can do this better. So that was in late 2015 that we started our company, started doing basically offline English classes. And all this time I was also writing a blog. So like what's called a WeChat public account. So it's WeChat's version of your own little website where you can post articles, videos, whatever. And one day, this guy at the gym told me, like, hey, man, like, I've heard you're Chinese. Like, why don't you make videos? Let me introduce you to a friend who's another foreigner making videos. So I met this guy. His name's Raz from Israel, who had started a company doing interviews. They would just interview expats living in China out on the street about a variety of topics. And he interviewed me for his show, and he was just like, yo, you need to make videos. You have to. And like that was it. I was just like, nah, man, like I was so scared of the camera. Like I just couldn't do it. And he just told me like, nah, man, I don't care. Like your Chinese is so good. Like you have to try it, like make videos. It's a waste for you to just sit and write articles. Like what are you doing? So that was it. Like I downloaded Douyin, like I said, the Chinese version of TikTok, and I posted a video that day.
Wow.
And it didn't do very well, but like I just kept going at it. And like me and my business partner, we would plan out all our videos, film, edit. We knew nothing about filming or editing, but we started doing it and like people started watching it. People enjoyed what we were making.
That's a great feeling when, you know, people start like listening or watching what you're doing, right?
Yeah, no, it was super weird because like it was basically, you know, we'd get 100 views, 200 views, 400 views. And the way that Douyin works, it's actually with an algorithm. So it's just based on like how much people watch and like, do they engage with it? Do they repost it or whatever? And we, all of a sudden, I think it was like our fourth video got 300,000 views.
Wow.
It was me reading a tongue twister in Chinese. And it just like the video just blew up and we're just like, what the? Okay. Maybe we can make videos.
Well, that's great. That's fantastic. And so here you are now, sitting on top of your social media empire.
Well, I wish I could call it an empire.
A dynasty. It's a dynasty.
We're working on it. We're working on it.
Well, Chris, tell us now, if you could go back and start learning Chinese all over again, like what would you do differently?
Number one, and this is what I tell a lot of people, anybody who asks me like how I learned Chinese, it's just learn the tones, please. Please learn the tones. right in the beginning, because, you know, a lot of people will find out if they've learned another language in the past, like once you've been doing it for a long time, it's really hard to go back and change stuff after the fact. So learn tones, because you'll hear people that say, oh yeah, like, you know, a lot of Chinese people, their tones are off too, so it's fine. But it's like, no, Chinese people who speak a different dialect, their tones are off because there's a systematic way that their tones change in their particular dialect. So you can kind of see how it changes and it'll be consistent. Whereas with us, our tones will be all over the place and there isn't necessarily the most consistent like rhyme or reason for it sometimes. It's just, you don't know what's going on. You didn't learn the tone. And like, that's going to be one of the hugest things that's going to help you so much in like actually making friends and like talking to people and having deep conversations. Because if you're going out and all you want to do is order a beer, then sure, like go out and say like, oh, Fu Yuan, Iga Pijo. And they'll know exactly what you're saying because that's it, you know? But if you want to have a deeper conversation and talk about like, oh, the, I don't know, the economic climate, or even just like shoot the shit and talk about the latest movie that you watched, then yeah, your tones better be a bit more on point, because there's going to be a much like wider variety of words that you're going to be using.
So then, Chris, what is the next step for you in your Chinese language?
Well, so, I mean, I guess a lot of people, they hear me and, you know, depending on what context I'm in, a lot of people just think that I'm Chinese or that I was at least born and raised in China. But at the same time, I feel like a lot of my other expat friends that I work with, like they speak Chinese at an equally high level, sometimes even higher. So it's just like an ongoing process. Like even right now where I feel like I don't ever need to look up a word really. Like I can guess just from context. I'm still learning every single day and like I haven't stopped. I'll read stuff out loud. I'll read signs, like every sign or like little slogan that I walk by on the side of the road, like I'll read it out loud and my wife will make fun of me. She's like, why are you reading that? And that's kind of what you need to do. Like if you want to keep improving, like never stop learning, just never stop. And like for me, like I would love to give like a TED talk or something in Chinese, like force myself to actually go and use a little bit more high level language, that type of stuff.
Well, it sounds like that is a goal within your grasp.
Well, I hope so.
Well, Chris, I think it's been really enlightening to hear your experience, and I appreciate you taking the time to share your story with us.
I hope people can learn something from it.
You have been listening to the You Can Learn Chinese podcast. Help us spread the word by sharing this with your friends, classmates, teachers, cousins, doctor, pioneer, chef, librarian, farmer, framer, pilot, mechanic, and that one guy named Jeremy. You can subscribe on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. And please write us a review so we know how we're doing. You can find us on Facebook and at mandarincompanion.com. Apologies to John Cena, we just ran out of time. The You Can Learn Chinese podcast is produced by myself, Jared Turner, and our editor is Kaiser Guo at Sup China. I'd like to thank our guest, Chris Max, and of course, thanks to my co-host, the man, the myth, the legend, John Pasden. See you next time.